During the break, Scott, our fearless producer, told me a story about how he knows for certain from a good friend from a personal incident that he was involved in that cops cannot do what this cop did to this woman that ultimately led to her death, which is to escalate a situation. And here was a failure to indicate and giving her a ticket. And her giving the cop lip because that was a ridiculous thing for him to have done. And it's escalated to the point that she's beaten, arrested, threatened, and is found dead. Scott, you had an incident when you were young and foolish, and what's the purpose of being foolish if you can't do it when you're young? And you were, when you were a younger version of yourself, you were walking out of a bar one night. What
happened? Well, I was a younger version of myself. I don't know if I was considered young. I was about, this happened about probably 6 years ago.
Okay.
7 years ago. And I walked out of a bar.
So you're old enough to be in the bar.
Yeah.
You're a couple of years past,
But 27, 28 years old.
Oh, okay. Okay.
So, Still young enough to be considered foolish.
Okay. Were you inebriated, or you think you were?
We were out for my friend's bachelor party.
Okay.
And so yeah, I was definitely inebriated.
Okay, but you're walking.
I was walking, and I was coherent because I remember it. I mean, yeah. It wasn't to the point where I was blackout or anything like that.
Yeah. And you were not even you were not attempting to get in a car and drive.
We were walking to the next bar. We're walking to the next bar.
Okay. So we're not going to put Scott up here as the poster child for moral. Hey, listen, I've gone to bachelor parties and where I knew I wasn't going to have to drive. And I have, when I was in college, I got inebriated more than I cared to admit.
Well, like I said, I was... It was not who it's yeah. not the Scott I am today.
Yes, yeah, yeah. I was
and
not the guy.
As we were walking out of the bar, another guy ran into me, tried to walk right through me, and I turned around and I kind of said, "Hey, man, watch where you're going." And he turned around and he said something to me, and then, so we got into the young man game of
I'm bigger and tough, yeah. And you're 6'4"?
6'4", yeah.
Yeah. And an athlete.
Yeah, about 200, at this time I'd be about 220 pounds, something like that.
Of muscle.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, so a guy that is 220 pounds of muscle at 27 years old that's an athlete, you know, somebody runs into you and is going to size you up after having run into you, you're going to size him up.
Yeah, and again, so, as I'm doing this, a cop comes up, and he tells us both to go our separate ways, and he goes...
And no blows were thrown.
No
right?
blows were thrown. We were just general pushing, the wolfing, if you will.
Wolfing. Huffing and puffing?
Huffing and puffing.
You were huffing and puffing. Okay.
I mean, I was out with... I had probably 15 of my friends with me at this time, so I wasn't going to do anything.
Right.
You know, and this guy wasn't going to fight me because I had 15 friends around me.
Well, and you're bigger and stronger than him anyway.
Yeah. And the cop comes up and he goes, "Break it up, guys." And another cop comes up and he says, "Hey, don't let the booze get to you, son." And I turn around and I go, "I'm not your son." I said to him, "I'm not your son."
Right. And in this place, you know, from a mental attitude, you've had a guy plow into you that rather than being apologetic, tried to be combative.
Well,
so,
I'm not going to...
So at this point, you're not backing down, and so for
I
somebody to come up...
I won't make any excuses for what
but,
I do.
But still, the mentality is important. The mentality is that if somebody plows into you and rather than says, "I'm sorry, I apologize," is combative after having plowed into you, the last thing you want is somebody who didn't see the event offering their judgmental evaluation of it and saying to you, "Don't let the booze get the better of you, son." Because in this particular case, your response was not booze-oriented. The guy plowed into you and was belligerent about it. So, you know, I can see why you would say that. You know, I'm not your son. I mean, don't tell me what I should and shouldn't do here, pal.
Well, one, it's a belittling, unless my dad calls me son, it's a right. belittling thing.
That's correct. He's belittling you, and you're actually doing what almost, I mean, I would respond the same way, and I'm not 6'4".
I'm not your son. That's what right. I said to him. And he goes, oh, you want to be an idiot, huh? And I go, I turned around and started walking back towards him. I go, what'd you say? And thankfully I had my friend Tim there, who is a cop, and we have a rule in our group that if Tim tells you, steps in and pushes you away,
yeah, accept it.
That's Tim telling you,
I got this,
you're
okay.
You're going to do something stupid.
Right, okay.
And Tim goes to him, he goes, you can't do that.
Yeah.
He goes to the cop, he goes, you can't do that. He goes, you're escalating the situation. You're saying something to him to get a rise out of him, and you know how he's going to react, and you're trying to get him to escalate things. He goes, you can't do that.
Yeah, because you want a fight, because you know that if he swings at you, you're going to pummel him, and you're going to then arrest him for resisting arrest. You're trying to entrap him into that so that you can, you know, get your... whatever off.
And at this time, Tim was a cop.
Right.
Now he's no longer a cop, but at this time he was a cop. And he goes, you can't do that. You're trying to escalate the situation. You're trying to get a rise out of him. If he comes over here and hits you, you're going to charge him with the crime, and then you and your partner are probably going to beat the crap out of him. He goes, you can't do that. You guys are escalating the thing. And it was funny because then the cop starts talking to Tim, and at this time all my friends have given.
You're in the back of the crowd.
Yeah, I'm in the back of the crowd. So I'm.
You're neutralized.
I'm neutralized.
Yeah.
And
that's fraternity. I think we did the same thing. The fraternity. The first it was about getting themselves in a pickle. We always neutralized them, and we always had a talker, and the talker would talk.
Well, yeah. And Tim right. was our talker.
Right.
And so he's talking to him, and the guy goes, oh, so what, you're trying to take his place then? And the guy goes, who do you think you are? And Tim says something along the lines of, it doesn't matter who I am. He probably said, because this is a famous right. line of Tim's, is I'm just a concerned citizen.
Yeah.
And the cop started talking to him, and Tim goes, you know what? You want to know who I am? I'm Officer Myron from such and such right. police, and gives his badge number. And he goes, if you want to, you know, and I'm going to have to know who your commanding officer is, because I think I'm going to have to make some phone calls tomorrow. And, like, at that point, it was like, Tim was like, now, if you're not going to detain me, I'm going to be on my way with my friends.
Yes.
And that was it.
Yeah.
And it was just one of those things. I was like, is that true? You know, the next morning I was talking to him. I was like, is that true? Are they not allowed to escalate things? He goes, no, they're not allowed to escalate things.
Right.
He goes, Scott, they have mace, they have a nightstick, and they have a gun and a taser.
Right, and a taser.
And a taser. He goes, if it was in their job description to escalate things, to get a rise out of people, how do you think they're going to respond? He goes, right. one of them would have hit you with a nightstick.
Right.
And he goes,
one would have shot you with a taser, and the other one would put pepper spray in your eyes. And you didn't know, and your crime was zilch. You know, giving your opinion of their inappropriate response is not a crime.
One, if you're not my dad, I don't want you calling me son. And two, if you call me an idiot, how do you think I'm going to respond? If you call me an idiot, I'm not going to just be there.
For doing something that's appropriate, you know, that's part of having a backbone. And, we have Larry we've had Larry on this show many times, and we've had Larry also, we have Larry regularly on this, on the Shabbat program. And Larry is not a guy that suffers abuse well. He's the kind of guy that if he was in that position and you plow into him, he's going to do the same thing. In fact, that's one of the reasons I like Larry, is because I'm the same way. You plow into me, and I'm going to say, hey, come on, what are you doing? And I'm going to look for you to be apologetic. And, you know, if you turn around and you're apologetic, say, hey, I'm sorry, I didn't see you, then it's all cool. I'm just going to walk away. But if you if you plow into me, plow into my somebody in my group, and then act like you know that you did nothing wrong, and then or worse, you're belligerent back. Yeah, I'm going to give you a serious lip. Now, am I going to strike you? No. But am I going to say, you know, something's seriously wrong with you? And that's your behavior is completely inappropriate. I was the talker in our group, and that is the appropriate response to call somebody who does that an idiot, and to demean them as son. The cop was wrong, and you what your friend the cop did was to point out to the cop that the cop was wrong in approaching you that way, and even worse in trying to escalate the situation. But that's what happened with this woman. The cop escalated. You put out your cigarette. Well, why? You get out of your car. No.
Well, the big question I have is... Again,
and then when she wouldn't do that, he beat her and threatened her with the taser.
When did saying no become a threat?
Right. Or when did just evaluating someone's talking to them, you know, like your response to the officer, were you threatening him? No. You know, when did telling somebody that what you've just said or what you've just done is inappropriate, I disagree with what you have said and done, when did that become a crime? But that is a crime. I mean, this woman, the professor in the South that was walking across the street, and the cop told her to lay down prone on the ground, and she said no. And then he, you know, forced her onto the ground, pounded her head into the pavement, put his knee in her back, and lashed her hands together while she's protesting, and then arrested her for resisting arrest. We are so far from reasonable.
Yeah.
And the woman stood trial, not the cop.
Yeah, put your cigarette out. No.
No.
No, I don't want... I'm in
my
car.
You shouldn't be smoking. It's stupid to smoke, you know. Okay, but it's not a crime to smoke.
Yeah, put your cigarette out. No.
Get out of your car. No, you know.
Get out of my car.
You've already given me the ticket for failure to indicate. Unless you can explain to me how I am somehow committing a crime to be sitting here in my car after you've given me the ticket for failure to indicate. No, I'm not getting out of my car. I don't want any more exposure to you. I think you're an idiot. No, I don't trust you. For good reason. Jerome, who is the author of the Latin Vulgate, which was the official Bible of the Roman Catholic Church. It's Latin because the Roman Catholic Church was conceived during the time of Theodosius. Most people attribute it to Constantine and the myth that Constantine saw the sign of the cross in the sky and heard the voice that says, under this sign, conquer, and that Constantine allegedly converted to Christianity, and that Constantine was the one who lifted the oppressive ban against Christianity. None of that is true. And a little bit of history here is important because Roman Catholicism, having grown out of the beast that is Rome, and the beast, Yahweh uses the term beast to describe the Roman Empire at that time, and then the same beast label is used to describe the Roman Catholic Church, which grew out of it and tread upon the whole world. It's important to know that all of the statements on Constantine are wholly mythological. Constantine never saw a sign in the sky, never heard the voice. He did not paint the shields of his officers, nor create banners that had Cairo on them and crosses on them. That is all the stuff of myth. There was a Christian cleric masquerading as a historian, Cassius Dio, I think is his name, but he became Constantine's biographer, And he has two accounts of the of this battle, where Constantine was engaged in a traitorous act. He decided that he wanted to be emperor of Rome, and the way that that happened during the day is that you would get a certain number of the legions to side with you, or the other legions would side with another. And he came to attack Rome, and the emperor of Rome with his legions to oppose the emperor and his legions. And the first account of that battle mentions nothing about a sign, and then Constantine's, or just traditional Roman military historians, dictate where Constantine was and where the various maneuvers were. And of course, this battle outside of Rome is chronicled in great detail, and there's no mention whatsoever of a sign. Now, even Cassius Dio describes that first, although he puts it now in heroic terms and religious terms, but there's no sign. Some 20 years after the fact, Cassius Dio creates a second version of Constantine's battle, now that Christianity is emerging as the most populous religion in the Roman Empire. And as a Christian theologian, he is creating another version of it. And what we find during this period, really from the period from Julius Caesar on, Roman histories are all the stuff of myth. Almost nothing the Romans wrote is an accurate depiction of what occurred. But instead, the military of Rome had become a religious appendage. And everything was as mythological about the leaders and their battles as was the myths that permeated their false gods. And so in the second restatement of the battle that Constantine won, where he beheaded the emperor and paraded his head around on a stick as he waltzed into to Rome, This concept of seeing the sign of the pagan cross emblazoned on the sun, which was his god. He was a blend of Mithraism and the unconquerable sun. And this concept under this sun, sign conquer, all of that was plastered onto the history to create the illusion of a God-inspired victory. Now, imagine God taking sides between two egotistical Roman generals as they had a treasonous war between the two of them because they both coveted power, where both of them were used terrorist tactics. But nonetheless, the whole story was recast on the scene to make Constantine seem like a religious and Christian hero. And even in the recasting of it, it has Constantine seen this sign in a place that he wasn't even near on the eve of this battle. Totally, completely false. Like a rabbit chase, here I am going to quote Jerome's translation of Paul's letter, which was a paraphrase at best, an amalgamation to serve the interests of the Roman Catholic Church. And I digressed to Constantine because I wanted to point out why it was written in Latin. Latin was the language of the Roman Empire. And Latin was not just the language of the Roman Empire, which is the beast that Yahweh said was so extraordinarily vicious, but he said that the beast that is Rome continues to live and will tread upon the whole world, that beast is the Roman Catholic Church. What language do you suppose that the Roman Catholic Church chose as its official language and still uses? When the Pope writes something, when the cardinals and bishops write something to communicate with one another, what language do you think they're still using? It's Latin. Their original copy of the New Testament? It was written in Latin. It's just one of those many sinews that connect Roman Catholicism with the beast that was the Roman Empire, the most vicious beast according to Yahweh, of all human institutions. And so it's important to know that Constantine did not convert to Christianity, did not win a battle based upon Christianity, did not see a sign of the cross superimposed in the sun, did not hear a voice under this sign conquered, did not have a communication from Yahusha. No, Constantine was a merciless, despicable, egocentric general, like so many are, deploying the Roman legions for personal gain. And he was ruthless in his deployment of power. And he never converted to Christianity, not that that would have been an upgrade from Mithraism. Mithraism and Christianity are extraordinarily similar religions. And he died a religious leader in the Mithra cult, where the unconquerable son was God. It wasn't until Theodosius, about 70 years after Constantine, that the Roman Empire converted to Christianity, and not just converted, imposed Christianity. During Constantine's life, he did not write the Edict of Milan that is associated with Constantine, did not legalize Christianity. All it did is legalize the religious freedom, so that in fact it was done to indicate that all the gods, the pagan gods of Rome, and the gods of these various religious sects, were all could coexist in harmony, and that people could pray exactly the same way to whatever god they chose. And so it was a bit of religious amalgamation, which is really the basis of Roman Catholicism. It amalgamated the corrupted, bastardized versions of Yahusha, as he was depicted, and Dionysus and Bacchus and Osiris and the like, from pagan religious lore, Tammuz as well, and the unconquerable son, the lord of Baal, of the Babylonian religious lore, and Ra of Egypt. So Constantine simply made all religions equal footing, except Judaism. Of course, you could not practice Judaism legally. Anything that you did that was even Torah observant, in terms of observing the Shabbat, that was outlawed. But Christianity was viewed as similar to the other pagan religions, and it was considered acceptable. It wasn't until Theodosius, Emperor Theodosius, and at the time that the empire out of Rome was crumbling, and now it was being managed in the east out of Constantinople, that he imposed Christianity, and he imposed the Roman Catholic version of Christianity, with himself as Pope at the head of it. So he was both the political leader and the religious leader, and used his military to impose the legions, to impose his edicts, and then established the lord-serf feudalistic situation that dominated and terrorized and pummeled Europe for 1,000 years thereafter. He's the one that imposed that, and he's the one that made any choice but conversion to an acceptance of his religion, with him as the sole determiner of what its doctrine would be, punishable by death. So that's the history of how Theodosius created the Roman Catholic Church as we know it today. Jerome, of course, was engaged by the popes, for the popes, to enable them to Romanize this religion. And so he created his Latin Vulgate from a mix of manuscripts. He did not have any of the manuscripts from the first or second century, but he did most of his translations such that he would have been subject to the plethora of manuscripts that were underwritten by Marcion, who is the Gnostic who promoted the Gnosticism of Pauline Christianity. And he did read Greek. He could not read Hebrew. So when it came to Hebrew, what he did is he tried to blend the various old Latin texts that were translations of the Greek Septuagint, which was a translation of the Hebrew, to create what they would refer to as the Old Testament of the Latin Vulgate. It's why the Latin Vulgate is so ridiculously inaccurate as it relates to Yahweh's testimony in the Torah, Prophets, and Psalms. And it is very inconsistent with the oldest manuscripts, even of the so-called Christian New Testament. So that way of background. Now, knowing that, here's what we learn from Jerome. He, recognizing that he has a problem with the Pope, because this last statement, you know, Paul said that God doesn't play favorites, that no individual, he says, you know, these people who, because of their past, were supposed to be important, that God does not, in fact, Paul's actual words were, let me just cite him so that you know what Jerome was dealing with. But from those currently reputed and supposed to be someone important because of their past, they were actually nothing to me. So it is royal families, kings, and the Pope, because of the past the mechanism they used to pick one from another, that these people were deemed to be someone important because of the past traditions or past lineage. And Paul is now saying that meant nothing to him. Now, he's actually besmirching the disciples, who they were seen as important because of their past relationship with Yahusha. But it's also demeaning to this imposition of popes and of kings. And then he says it carries through the face of the God of man not take hold of. So while Paul's writing is poor, most translators are trying to say that in the presence of God, therefore, this God is not going to honor any man as important. No man is garners a sense of importance or of authority with God. Now, the problem with that is that undermines the whole claim of the Pope, and now you've got the founder of Christianity, Paul, undermining papal claims. And, of course, he's undermining himself because he claims that for himself that he has been handed this authority from God and that he alone has the right to communicate to Gentiles. So that's the problem that he has. Now, this statement from Paul continues. But to me, the ones currently presuming and supposing, of no account was their advice or counsel. So what he's doing is saying that Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John have no value whatsoever because that's their witness. So according to Paul, you can throw them away. Now, that's a problem even for Roman Catholicism and for Jerome and his popes, because they claim that their religion is based upon these four, what later became known as Gospels. And they all have to be taken away. It also undermines the merit of 1st and 2nd Peter and of James and of 1st, 2nd, and 3rd John. The same testimony from the same individuals, and so you've trashed the Christian New Testament. So this is a really sticky situation for a translator working under a maniacal pope to deal with this. So this is what Jerome authored. And away from those who were pretending to be something. Wow. Whatever they might have been once, it means nothing to me. God does not accept the reputation of a man. Now, they were pretending to be disciples because that's what Yosha called them. Now, he didn't use the Greek term disciple, and we're transliterating the Greek word disciple, which we should have translated because he spoke this in Hebrew, and he used those who learn. Now, to learn or to be taught is yara in Hebrew. So he would have used a variation of yara to teach in Hebrew, and never should have been translated into to Greek and then transliterated into Greek as a into English as a title when he never used the word disciple in Greek. So I don't know, who knows why the Christian church decided to ascribe these people with the title disciple, and no one even knows what the term means today, apart from scholars who actually know that it means to teach. They actually know Yosha spoke Hebrew, and therefore he used yara, meaning to teach. Shawa is another Hebrew word for teaching as well. Torah means source from which teaching flows. He would not have used the term Torah here because these men were not a source of teaching. They were the recipients of teaching, so yara would have been the more appropriate terms. But he is here undermining the disciples and saying, yeah, that meant nothing to me. God doesn't assign authority. So it's interesting here. Jerome, the author of the Latin Vulgate, which was considered the only acceptable Bible of the Roman Catholic Church, still considered the only authorized official Bible of the Roman Catholic Church, the Latin Vulgate, which prevailed exclusively for 1,000 years, made no attempt to translate what Paul actually wrote. But he chose to rewrite it in such a way that would be less offensive to the imposition of Roman Catholicism and its pope and its cleric and king imposition on common people. But when he did so, he created a whole host of problems that weren't there in the original text. Now, the original text is, if you're rational about it, means that you to accept Paul, you have to disavow Moshe, Dode, and therefore the Torah, the prophets, the Torah, the Psalms, and all the prophets. And then you have to disassociate yourself and your Bible from Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John, as well as the letter from James, three letters from Peter, and the three letters from John, plus Revelation. You have to throw them all away. But in the Jerome's view of it, you have another issue here. It says, whatever they might have been once, it means nothing to me. God does not accept the reputation of a man. So now you're in a situation where you're saying, okay, if God does not accept the reputation of a man, why did Yosha, first of all, choose these 12 men? Why did Yahweh choose the prophets? Why did Yahweh choose Moshe? Why did Yahweh choose Abraham? Now, if God can't make this kind of choice, can't embrace an individual, and accepts no individual, then why did he bother with them? But then it also means that if you say he accepts the reputation of a man, didn't he bestow a specific reputation to the 12 disciples and a reputation to the prophets, calling them prophets? That's a title that he ascribed to them. In the case of the apostles, which that's a transliteration again of the Greek word, which never should have been transliterated as a title, because what he would have said, it's apo means set apart, and agelos, which is messenger. So apostle should have been rendered and was spoken as Malak Kodesh, set apart messengers. So if God set these individuals apart to be his messengers, then the reality is that he ascribed them a reputation. Now, if you're saying that God can't ascribe a reputation, which is Paul is saying, then he himself can't be one. And he calls himself an apostle. And he wrote in Greek. And so it undermines Pauline authority, but it also undermines all of the authority of the Pope. The Pope claims that God is accepting of the reputation of a Pope to prevail and to impose their edicts on the people and the human institution of the church to do so. So this creates a dilemma both for Roman Catholicism and also one for Yosha, means that he was wrong to ascribe this title to those he sent out to be messengers, as we transliterate the Greek word apostello into apostle. And then Paul concludes, according to Jerome, and those who were claiming to be something had nothing to offer me. The only one that is, we are certain, confronted Paul at the Jerusalem Council is Shimon Kefesh. Now, Paul will condemn three individuals there, Shimon Kefesh, Peter, as well as Yohanan and John and Jacob, James. But the one that Luke, Paul's pal, at least initially, chronicles in Acts as speaking out and disagreeing with Paul and providing testimony against Paul, that Paul is saying that their testimony offered nothing to me, and in that quotation, Shimon Kefesh, known as Peter today, claims his authority based upon having not only been with Yosha, but having participated in Shavua. And he says, that meant nothing to me. Well, it certainly meant something to Yosha. So if it meant nothing to Paul, he was not of the same mindset, the same perspective, the same attitude, the same approach, the same anything as the person that he claimed he was speaking for. Now, if you're a Christian, you need to resolve this conflict.